Is it important to know who wrote the book of James? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, and we begin a new series on the book of James. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Pedrito Maynard Reed, also a professor in the School of Theology and assistant to the President for Diversity at Walla Walla. Pedrito is an authority on the book of James. Having done his doctoral dissertation on the book, he is also the author of several commentaries on James. So welcome to both of you.
Delighted to be here.
Let's start with that leading question. Why is it important to know who wrote the book of James?
It's called the context. I keep saying that a text without a context is a pretext. If we really want to understand passages, it's very good to know who wrote it, when it was written, as far as we can, so that we can understand the setting in which we misunderstand texts. So, because many times we think they were written in the 20th century in Walla Walla.
But now let me press you on that.
In English.
Yeah, in English.
But let me press you on that, Pedrito. Much of the Old Testament, we don't know who wrote the books. So what you're saying sounds like a very modern one, which doesn't fit the context of the Bible.
When the books came out, though, they knew. Most people knew where it came from, and they understood the pastor who wrote it, even if they didn't give their name to the book. It came from this genre of writings, from this setting. And we need to seek to find out when it was written, and if possibly by who, so that we can understand why the author. As we'll see throughout the book, James has been misinterpreted numerously because we just take it out of context and not understanding James and his setting.
Okay. I think Pedrito is saying it's an advantage. It's helpful to know who the author is. For me, I would add another much smaller reason, and that is just out of curiosity, that I always like to know who it was. And in this particular book, it's interesting because it might have been the brother of Jesus or the half-brother of Jesus. Not that that sanctifies him. But
that's a good point to make.
It does add a curiosity factor. You know, this could well have been written by a member of Jesus' family. And that has some, I don't know what word to use here. It has some fascination.
Interesting.
Now, let me give a couple of examples here of disappointment. These are personal examples involving me, that when I thought somebody had written the piece and then discovered who really wrote it, it changed my perspective. I'm thinking here of when I did, when I wrote my Sinai Golgotha series, a critique came through, and I didn't know who wrote it, but I was rather negatively inclined until I discovered that it was Bill Johnson, the newly arrived editor. And so all of a sudden, I went back and looked at that in a more positive way. Another illustration of the same thing. One of my wife's favorite pieces and one of mine is, oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person.
Yeah.
Now, that one has always been attributed to George Eliot.
That's what I thought it was.
Yep. But we now know that it's most likely Dinah Maria Craik. Now, I don't know George Eliot or Dinah Maria Craik, either one, although Eliot is.
Is George Eliot also a pseudonym?
Yes, I think it is.
Yeah. So,
but
either way,
discovering that things aren't quite what they were, what you thought they were, can be disenchanting and disturbing.
That's the whole key of this. If we sometimes, for example, think that, say, James was written by the brother of Jesus and found out later that it was not written by the brother of Jesus, all of a sudden we look at it totally different and we tend to accept it or reject it or take it more seriously or not more seriously. And the point of trying to find out who it is to see what is the context. Why did the author write it? Whether it's the brother of Jesus or not the brother of Jesus. As you'll see, I believe it was the brother of Jesus.
Let's go ahead and take that question right now, Pedrito.
No, before you go there, though, I think there's one other reason why the authorship is interesting. Is that if I'm not a textual expert, but did not the authorship play a role in the inclusion of books in the canon? In other words, when they were making up the corpus of the Bible, having some idea of who the author was one of the ingredients in deciding whether or not that letter got included in the Bible.
that was a key rationale. In other words, if it turned out that, for instance, the book of Hebrews was attached to Paul's name, mm-hmm. and that probably helped it to attain canonical status.
And James was one of those that took a long time to get into the canon. One of the reasons the first time anybody cited it was Origen, end of the second century, beginning of the third century. Mm-hmm. Another reason to get books in the canon, how popular they were used in the churches. And James was not used. And for a number of reasons, James was not used, as we will go through and see. One was its attack on rich, and we don't like that as a church starts to grow. You know, another one, it's not very New Testament. So that took a while. And as soon as somebody recognized that, you know, maybe it's the brother of Jesus that did it. Ah, we need to get that in the canon. Okay.
And by the way, let's say a word about the canon. It may be that a lot of people listening who don't know about that phrase. Anybody want to talk about the canon? What is the canon? It's not what the pirates used to fire bullets.
No. Well, it's probably the most tantalizing, the most difficult question, because there's more for the New Testament books. We can see them coming and going. But for the Old Testament books, we have no idea how those books got there. For instance, Song of Solomon. Can anybody tell me why and how that book got into the canon? But it's a normative group of books. That's what canon means, is norm.
It's a rule or a standard. Yeah. So the books that made it into the Bible are referred to as a standard, otherwise known as the canon, C-A-N-O-N, not
canon. Or canon, or canon as we have it today, did not come together until the 4th century, 400 years. And James was one of the last ones to get in there. Mm-hmm. It was just not accepted.
And actually, the Bible we have didn't get made up in its current order until the Protestant Reformation.
That's right. When they left off the 14 books that the Catholics had.
Yeah, I think
the Apocrypha. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The first time that we have the 27 books in our New Testament, no more, no less, is the Easter letter of Athanasius, 367. I mean, that's 300 plus years since the resurrection.
Right. But Alden, given the nature of life in those days, I mean, the first century and a bit was very dangerous to have a Bible, any portion of it. So the idea of it being compiled, I mean, people held those things in secret and copied them one to the other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not until Christianity really becomes dominant that you would expect a public version of the canon to show up.
And there were numerous canons by many, many different groups. The one we have is the result of one group of people who finally... Now, I believe, while saying that, in case anybody gets nervous, the Holy Spirit was working. We have to admit the Holy Spirit was working and putting these, allowing these church fathers and priests and whoever that did it to come together and say, these are going to be normative for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they were done 400 years later. James was one of the last ones.
And the Bible is testimony that when God allows human beings to play a part in the role, it's going to be messy.
That's right.
Any way you look at it. God's people have been all over the place, and one of my favorite lines is, God's people have never had their act together more than a few minutes at a time.
Speaking collectively, right?
Yeah.
You ask about James, and who really is the author? This is a huge debatable question. The latest commentary that just came out of James, Dale Allison, an update of a new writing of the International Critical Commentary, he just wrote a 1,000-page commentary.
On the book of James?
On the book of James. The bibliography is 40 pages thin, small font. The introduction is 109 pages alone, just on the book of James. I'm wading through it to write a review. And he goes through all the arguments that shows that James could be written by in the second century, and it's a pseudonym. He also goes through the argument that I hold, that it's very early, and it's possibly, I believe, the first writing by a person in the New Testament era. And there are many Jameses mentioned in the Bible, but the one that we know of as a disciple, he was killed early, and there are many others that have not a lot of authority, it seems. But the James that we find writing from the context of his writing seemed to be the one that was part of the early church. But part of the early church that before the church became institutionalized. And if we read the early part of Acts, we find the church is not Christian and Jew. The church is all God's people who accepted Jesus Christ, but they're mm-hmm. still very Jewish. So you find the book of James very much like that book, like that that leader of the church in Jerusalem. And we can't find anybody else that would be James that would be that. No.
No, may I interrupt you? You said one James was killed earlier. Who was that? James, the son of Zebedee?
James, the son of Zebedee. Oh, okay. He was the first martyr.
Stephen, the first apostle, the martyr.
For those technical people listening on, the big arguments against this James is that Greek is very sophisticated. And how could a brother of Jesus write such sophisticated Greek? Now, one, we have to admit that it's very possible that he did know Greek. But we also have to have another possibility, and that is that this book, what we have here is an updated version Greek.
Or translated version.
It could be, he could have written it in simpler Greek, but somebody later. For example, I like to use for Seventh-day Adventists who are listening, they take Desire of Ages, and you can find a modern rendering of it.
It's put into mm-hmm. current English.
It's put mm-hmm. into current English. Mm-hmm. So in the second century, somebody could have taken this document and upgraded the Greek, but mm-hmm. the basic essence, the world view, the setting, is very much very, very early.
So I'd like to hear something about the whole scope of the book of James.
A survey on the article? I mean, the whole book? Yeah, give us a one-liner, Pedrito.
Every book has an overall theme mm-hmm. setting. I suggest that suffering is the theme of James. Mm. He starts off, all those are in trials, and then he ends mm-hmm. at the end, is there anyone suffering? And throughout, he's writing to an audience that are people that are suffering, and he addresses this in
various ways. So that would help make an early date, then, too.
And that would make an early date, but it's not an early date of Christian suffering. It's people that are suffering, no matter who they are. Through pain, through sickness, through poverty.
Okay, so not just for political reasons.
Not just for some spiritual reason, religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it's interesting that Jesus is rarely mentioned in the book.
Again, because it's that early. He's talking, his audience are Jews mm-hmm. in his community. I said it in Palestine, whether Christian or not Christian. And he states himself as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, but he's writing to the general audience out there, as the prophets did.
Who already knew about Jesus.
Yeah. And they may have known about Jesus. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, our time is just about up. Next week, we're going to be starting with the book of James, with chapter 1, moving right straight through it. We're grateful that you're on board with us, and I think we're going to have some really good times. My thanks to Pedrito and to Dave for their contributions, and also to David Olson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.